This is a test. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, I'll call the Employment Benefits Programs Committee to order and ask the clerk to take the roll.
Thank you, Representatives LaFour.
Here.
Doctor. Craig.
Here.
Lanning. Mitzkak. Owens. Ruby. Senators Dever.
Here.
Beckedahl.
Here.
Krebsbaugh.
Present.
Larson. Lee.
Present.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We missed one.
Did you get Elisa?
And Mitzkak. Thank you. Sorry about that.
So
then we do have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Okay. All right. Then is there a motion for the minutes of the last meeting?
Approved, Mr. Chairman.
Second. Motion second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. Okay, so I want to kind of go through how we're going to do this. This process, the last minute we, or excuse me, at the last meeting we decided which bills to take jurisdiction of, and our job today is not obviously it's not the function of this committee for a do pass or do not pass. It's to listen to the information provided to then vote on a favorable or unfavorable or no recommendation to the policy committee. And the report that we're going to receive today will be attached to the bills in question. So we have the bills online, and obviously they're on laws. So our job today is to listen to either the bill sponsors or some information from PERS, and then we will give others the ability to come up and speak as well. And so, like I said before, we will go bill by bill and make a recommendation. So, all right. With that, I will start with Senate Bill 2045, and I see there's also proposed amendments. So, Scott, do you want to start this?
Here's a hard copy of that. I think this is here for the amendment.
Okay. Here for the amendment?
It is just the amendment.
I think that's the reason.
Okay. All right. All right. We are here for the amendment. Okay. Are you going to go through that then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Miller. I'm the executive director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. So we have in front of you and in both paper and electronic copy a slide deck very similar to what I provided to you a couple different times last year, just going through each of the bills that you'll be talking about. The first of those is an amendment to our technical corrections bill. So we submitted a technical corrections bill to make some fairly innocuous changes to some of our statutes to help bring us in compliance with federal law. We have to comply with any number of federal tax requirements and a few other changes. One of the things that we learned of after we submitted this bill to the Legislative Assembly, I guess, back in April. I'm not sure who we submitted to there. I wasn't here. One of the things we learned was that we are, and we just learned this late this fall, we have a 457 deferred compensation program that is a statutory program that provides for supplemental retirement savings for members, for employees of both political subdivisions and the state. We learned late fall that we are actually receiving some contributions from employers on their employees' behalf. Well, the way that our statutes are written, all of our statutes regarding the deferred compensation plan, all of those statutes contemplate employee contributions. They don't prohibit employer contributions, but they only talk about employee contributions. And so the board, we took this to the board, I believe, in November or December. It was probably December. And asked them, what would you like us to do? Our two options are to keep the money in the plan and seek an amendment to our statutes in order to specify that employer contributions are acceptable for our deferred compensation plan, and go to the IRS and ask through a voluntary compliance program filing to make sure that they're okay with that, because right now our plan document doesn't really talk about employer contributions. Or alternatively, we could return those funds, or we could return those funds, but also do a voluntary correction program filing with the IRS, because we already have funds that our plan document doesn't really talk about. And so we're going to end up going to the IRS no matter what. The PERS board, as it was taking a look at the issue, decided, like most of us, that more retirement savings is better. And just because it happened to come from an employer instead of an employee, that's still money that should be in a retirement plan for an employee. And so they opted for the first option, that is, keep the money in the system and submit an amendment for legislative consideration to specifically allow employer contributions into our deferred compensation section 457 plan. And so that's what this amendment is. We submitted it to you at your meeting a couple of weeks ago. You can see on the screen and in the written testimony that you have, I guess, that from our consultant's perspective, they had to make certain assumptions in order to determine what the actual impact would be. And so we thought at most there would be a 5% participation rate in this. We only have two employers out of several hundred right now that are making, that we know of, that are making employer contributions. And so we don't think this is going to be a real big program at all. And so 5% participation is probably fairly high. And then we also assumed that they would make a 4% contribution. And the reason that we went with 4% is that if you recall in our hybrid plan, our defined benefit plan, we have a program called PEP. It's Portability Enhancement Provision. That was implemented that was passed by the 1999 Legislative Assembly. And what that does is it encourages members of the hybrid plan to make contributions into the 457 plan. If they make contributions into the 457 plan, which is the plan we're talking about with this amendment, then they will vest in or have access to a certain percentage of their employer contribution into the defined benefit plan. And so that 4% is the maximum that they can vest in the employer contribution in the defined benefit plan. So that's why we had them, we didn't figure an employer would go over that 4% anyway. And so that's what we had them analyze for us. The result of their analysis is that the impact of the amendment is to reduce the maximum funded ratio by 0.1% in 2028. If you recall, right now our defined benefit plan is never scheduled to be 100% funded. We actually go up to 78.1% in 2028, and then we gradually decrease down to zero in 2106. This would decrease that maximum by a tenth of a percent, so almost a statistically insignificant amount, frankly, and so there's really not a whole lot of impact. And so that's what this is. The PERS board obviously is in favor of this amendment, and then once, if this is passed and approved and implemented, then we'll go to the IRS with this correction program, with this resolution of this issue.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to address this amendment? Anyone on the committee? Okay, our job right now, I'm sorry, Senator Dever.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just gonna ask Scott, just to refresh my memory, this committee considered the bill. This is an amendment to the bill that was already considered and given a favorable recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, that is correct.
All our job here today is to do a favorable, unfavorable, or no recommendation on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Is there a motion? Senator Beckedahl.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the committee accept a favorable recommendation on the amendment to Senate Bill 2045 as presented.
There's a motion for a favorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the roll on the amendment on Senate Bill 2045.
Thank you, Representatives LaFleur.
Yes.
Doctor, Kreit.
Yes.
Lanning, Mitzkock.
Yes.
Owens, Ruby. Senators Dever.
Yes.
Beckedahl.
Yes.
Krebsbaugh. Larson. Lee.
Aye.
And Mather.
Aye.
That motion does carry.
Okay, the motion carries, and it'll be, have a favorable recommendation on it. We'll now go to Senate Bill 2226, and Scott, do you want to address that?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to. Again, Scott Miller with the Public Employee Retirement System. Senate Bill 2226 is the bill that represents the governor's proposal within his budget to create a third health insurance option to go with our current grandfathered plan and our high deductible health plan. The third option would be a non-grandfathered plan for which the state would pay the full family premium. Employees would have the option to buy up to the grandfathered plan, the plan that we have right now, which is currently $28 a month higher. So they'd have to pay $28 a month in order to have the same exact benefits that they have right now. The non-grandfathered plan does have additional benefits. Those are the AC benefits, ACA benefits that you might have heard of. But it also has higher deductibles and higher out-of-pocket maximums. That's the reason why it's $28 less than the non-grandfathered plan, or the grandfather plan. The bill also provides a $500 a year incentive for people to choose the high deductible health plan instead of either the grandfathered or the non-grandfathered, more traditional plans. From our consultant's perspective, the actuarial value of the new non-grandfathered plan is about 5% less. Those changes are offset somewhat by the increased benefits that they have, those ACA benefits that I had mentioned. And it would ultimately reduce the state contribution to health premiums by about $10.8 million.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Any questions? Anyone in the audience like to
question?
Senator Mathern.
Thank you. Does this bill provide for the options for state employees to move between the plans?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, employees have the option to move between the plans during our open enrollment period every fall. So this doesn't affect that at all.
Does this bill or the consultant's recommendation note the consequence to the grandfather plan of the employees moving into this plan?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, the consequences of, so just to clarify, of people moving from the grandfather plan to the non-grandfather plan?
Right. Let's say all the people with no health problems and are single, and they all move to this plan.
Mr. Chairman.
And then what happens to the other plan?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, that would eventually cause that plan to become much more expensive. And depending on what future legislative assemblies did regarding funding of the health plan, that may eventually take that plan out of grandfathered status, and we would need to move all the employees into the non-grandfathered plan.
Okay, any discussion or testimony from anyone in the audience on Senate Bill 2226? Okay, any further discussion from the committee? Senator Dever.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I am the sponsor of Senate Bill 2226, and the reason I am the sponsor is because this was proposed in the OMB budget as the recommendations from the governor, and the chairman of Senate Appropriations just said that he thought that this should go through a policy committee and be given due consideration. It's been assigned to the Senate Government and Veterans Affairs Committee. Similar thing with the next bill, 2227, is the governor's recommendation regarding the pension plan. And I thought in order to get that on the table and have it appropriately discussed, that it should be introduced, and that's what I did with that one, so both of those. So regarding Senate Bill 2226, I'm not sure how to move on this, because I'm not sure until we have the conversations whether I'm going to support it, but I think for our purposes, I would move a favorable recommendation because it moves it into the discussion that it should have.
There's a motion for a favorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mathern.
I think we've had a discussion. And and the discussion leads me to think that our main plan is at great risk. So I'm going to vote against the motion. And I think it's tying up a whole bunch of committee work when basically Scott said, you know, everybody who's going to benefit is going to move. And so that will destroy the other plan eventually. So anyway, I understand, though, the motion of having somebody review it again. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to take the roll on a favorable recommendation on Senate Bill 2226.
Thank you, Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Craig?
No.
Owens? Oh, excuse me, I've got the wrong one. Nitzka?
Yes.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Becadal?
Aye.
Krebsbaum? Larson? Lee?
No.
Mather?
No.
The motion does carry with four.
Okay, the motion for a favorable recommendation has been adopted by a 4-3 vote, and the report will be attached. Senate Bill 2227. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Scott Miller, North Dakota PERS. This bill, Senate Bill 2227, essentially combines three bills that you've seen before. Senate Bills 2046, all three of these are from PERS, by the way. Senate Bill 2046 was the bill that proposed to eliminate the retiree health insurance credit for new employees only. Senate Bill 2047, which proposes to reduce the benefit multiplier for new employees only from 2% down to 1.75%. And Senate Bill 2048, which is the fourth year of our recovery plan, which provides for additional contributions, 1% employer and 1% employee contribution increases into the retirement system. The consultant, and the other thing that Senate Bill 2027 does, in addition to combining the three of them, it provides for a one-time $265 million deposit into the defined benefit plan from the SIF fund. Our consultant notes that right now, the main PERS system is projected to be insolvent in 2106, as I had mentioned. These changes with the cash infusion are projected to result in 100% funding for the main PERS system in 2037. The changes will reduce retirement benefits and diminish total compensation packages and result in benefit inequity, but will increase the preservation of benefits. We'll be 100% funded sometime in the next 20 years. So that is a description of what the bill does, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience like to address us in regard to Senate Bill 2227? Okay, seeing none, then we'll go to, do we have a motion or a committee discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dever.
If we would have done this about 8 years ago, we'd be further along than 8 years into an 18-year program because what the market has done. My interest, I think, in all four of the bills now that are presented, as I discussed earlier, is it's time to make a decision. Are we going to be on defined benefits and fund it? Or are we going to go to defined contributions and fund a bankrupted, well, that's not quite the right, fund a defined benefit plan with no additional new members into it, which it, we'll find out later is extremely expensive. So I would move a favorable recommendation on this bill, knowing that the appropriation process will okay. give it due consideration and do whatever it will with it.
Okay. We have a favorable recommendation motion. Is there a second? We have a favorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Is there a second?
I'll, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
deference to my colleague, I will second the motion for purposes of discussion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second for favorable recommendation. Any further discussion? Senator Beckedahl.
Chairman, there are...
Here it goes. Mr. Chairman, there's parts of this bill that I think are necessary and I like, and there's parts I don't like. So I'm torn between giving it a favorable or a no recommendation because of that. I don't want the committees to look at it and see a favorable and knowing that there are parts of it that I don't feel favorable. But that, I'll defer to the committee on the rest of that.
Well, you raise a very good point, and I think, you know, policy committees or appropriations committees are going to give this its full weight on its own. And, I mean, they'll see the rate recommendation, but they'll also see the report, which is very important. And that's one of the biggest reasons that goes to this committee, is to provide the policy / appropriations committees that information. So having said that, it's just one of the other things that a representative or a senator has to weigh in policy committee. So, Scott, go ahead, Senator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we could take out each portion individually and give favorable and unfavorable, I would like that process, but I don't think we can do that here with one bill.
No, we can't.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond
to
that.
Sure, Senator Dever.
We do have the three bills that have already gone through this committee with a favorable recommendation that are three of the four parts, the fourth one now being the cash infusion. So those are already on the table. So.
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I should have directed your attention to the next page as well. These are a table and a graph from our from the actuarial analysis, which you also have access to. So I apologize. I should have directed your attention to that. The table shows what the actual impact of this is. And as you can see from the far right column, the year 100% funded status is achieved for the main system. Currently, it's NA. We never get 100% funded. This would bring to 2037, and the graph is just a graphical representation of that. So I apologize for not bringing that to your attention before.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mather.
Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to give this bill a favorable recommendation. And, you know, there's a lot of people on this committee that are on the Appropriations Committee. We'll have to make some tough decisions about these dollars. But that's where it's going to finally come to, and it's a very big decision. But I think being properly vetted through the policy committees is going to help the appropriators do a better job.
I agree. Any further discussion? Senator Dever.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add, and I think others here would agree, that it's a good thing to do. Whether we choose to fund it or not is beside the point. And I will argue not only that it's a good thing to do, but we ought not complain about the unfunded liability unless we're willing to pay for it.
I would concur with that. And I realize that through this process and a lot of the big dollar decisions probably won't be made until later. But I think this needs to be vetted. I think it needs to be part of the discussion because if you look at that graph, that tells a lot. And as Senator Dever had said earlier, is that had we done this years ago, you would hope that future legislatures won't have to have much for cash infusion. As you know, that's 1.1 billion or 1.2 billion, that's a pretty big number. Now, that doesn't mean that if you vote on a favorable recommendation at this point that you won't vote no in committee or vote no on the floor, because we have to fund our priorities. And does this rise to the level of a priority that will win the day? So, again, a big part of this process, regardless if you vote favorable or unfavorable, is the information that is acquired through this process in this committee. So any further discussion? Hearing none, I will ask the clerk to read or take the roll, please. Take the vote, please.
Thank you, Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Kreit?
Yes.
Mitzkog?
Yes.
Senators Dever?
Yes.
Heckadol?
Aye.
Krebsbaum? Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
Aye.
The motion carries.
Okay, the motion carries 7-0 on a favorable recommendation, and the report will be attached. Okay, Senate Bill 2233. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Scott Miller with the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. Senate Bill 2233 is an infertility, at least, and these are my words, infertility treatment health insurance mandate. Whether it was a mandate was actually a point of discussion at the committee meeting earlier this week. This bill mandates that health insurance policies provide coverage for infertility treatment. The reason that it's in front of you is because of its potential impact on the North Dakota Purchase Group Insurance Plan. Our group plan, health plan, currently covers infertility treatments, but Senate Bill 2233 does expand that coverage and reduce member cost share. Section 3 of Senate Bill 2233 states that this mandate is not subject to North Dakota Century Code Section 540328, which requires all health insurance mandates to be first applicable to North Dakota PERS for a biennium and requires North Dakota PERS to report on the effect of the mandate. Thus, there is no North Dakota PERS report. That chapter also requires a cost-benefit analysis be done by legislative management. My understanding is they are engaging in that right now. Sanford Health Plan reports a premium increase of about 0.1%, 0.1% due to the change. Our consultant notes that because the current North Dakota PERS infertility benefits are relatively rich, the impact of the removal of the deductible and benefit maximum is not actuarially significant. And that concludes my information on this bill.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
We have the bill sponsor, Senator Grabinger. Would you like to address the committee?
Chairman and committee members, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come here and answer any questions you may have. I could go through testimony that was received in the IBL committee. Many of those folks that were there that gave testimony, it was a very emotional testimony in many cases. Many of these ladies have gone through trials trying to become mothers, and the desire for them to become mothers is great. This is just something that hasn't been adjusted, hasn't been taken care of in many years. My family, my wife and I went through a similar process when we got our child, and it was through the gestational carrier procedure. My daughter was the first one born in the state of North Dakota, and that is essentially an IVF type of process. Very expensive. The cost of the medications, the infertility medications, and the ability to extract eggs, that cost has gone up dramatically, and yet the insurance coverage for that in many cases is $20,000 max. And so that really affords these young couples and these young ladies that have an issue with infertility, and it may be from cancer, it may be other diseases that have caused this, cysts on their ovaries and things like that, that are preventing them from having a natural pregnancy and a natural birth. And they've gone through this process, and it has broken families, these young families, financially. I myself, when we went through it, if it wasn't for some of my family to step up and help me, I sold my prized Harley-Davidson FLT in order to do it. But my miracle is now 23 years old, and all we're asking here is that we step up to the plate and afford these women the same opportunity to have a miracle for them.
Thank you,
any
Senator.
Any questions, I'd be happy.
Yeah, I have one. It seems like, again, as Scott said, this is not a big dollar amount at all. Do you have any idea what they do in other states, like the states surrounding us, as far as coverage? In this area?
I can tell you this. This bill was passed in the state of Delaware. There are 15 states that recognize it to a higher level than what we are, and we would be stepping up to the plate, no doubt. This is, you know, I'm not going to beat around the bush with you folks. This is a mandate. This is telling the insurance companies, we need your help. We need you to step up and help these. It's not going to be that many people because, face it, we only have one fertility clinic in the state of North Dakota. It's over in Fargo. How many women are going to take that step to go and proceed time and again to try and get a child? This just affords them another chance or two. Okay. I mean, it is, not only is there the transportation costs and everything else going over to Fargo and staying there and so forth associated with this, it's all the medical costs too, and when there's a cap on it, we're just breaking these young people trying to live a dream.
Senator, do you have any idea approximately the cost of one? I mean, you got a lot of different categories here.
I have it right here in front of me. One IVF cycle can cost between $15,000 and $25,000, and on average, it takes 2 to 3 cycles to achieve a pregnancy.
Okay.
So when we have a $20,000 cap, if they use it once, they don't get another chance. They're done. And that's pretty hard to take in some of these cases.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Beckedahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Grabinger, I see the PERS impact here is about $600,000 by the fiscal note. And I don't suppose we do a fiscal note for the other insurance carriers, but was there anything presented in testimony at IBL to give a scope of what the mandate's going to cost other carriers in the system?
Not the amount, because it's very hard to decide that. Okay. But they did oppose it. I mean, we had Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Sanford both came in and opposed the bill based on the cost that it's going to cost them more money. And there's the fear that it's going to raise premiums and so forth. But like I said, it's we're talking a handful of ladies a year that this is stepping out to the plate. Or I shouldn't say ladies. There's couples. These are people that want to be families. So.
Okay. Any further questions? Senator Dever.
Well, Senator Grabinger, I'm just curious. You indicated that it will cost them more. So they provide coverage for these services now, but just at a lesser amount than
right.
You're calling for in the
right. And that's right now, most of them have a max of $20,000 coverage. And as you can see, that sometimes doesn't even cover the cost of the medical procedure the first time.
So what does the bill call for?
Expanding that so that it's covered completely. And I did have talks with some of constituents who came to me with this. And we did talk about maybe a suggestion down the road, an amendment to raise the amount, if there's an amount that can be agreed to or something, so that at least maybe they can get 2 IVF treatments and take that opportunity, get a second chance, because chances are it might not work the first time. And that's just the facts.
Any further questions?
Okay. That's one of the reasons, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see this move forward, is so that we can take and try and make it work for everybody, the insurance companies included. And I've had discussions with some people from Blue Cross Blue Shield in that matter.
Thank you, Senator.
Yep.
Anyone else like to speak either for or against Senate Bill 2233?
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Gardner, Greater North Dakota Chamber. This is an odd platform for the Chamber to be in, and I realize this is for PERS and for infertility treatments, but one thing I want to bring up is this is for the entire bill. You know, a recommendation from this committee carries some weight, but in recent years, many mandates have come, you know, to insurance companies, and a lot of those costs are transferred onto employers and employees. So, and being that health insurance costs are probably the number one cost next to wages for employers, I mean, I just don't think our employers can handle another mandate out there. So we're going to be opposed to this bill, and I realize this is maybe an odd platform for us, but we did come out in front of IBL against this bill and just wanted to make sure that this body knew where we stood.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Matt? And I just want to point out that this mandate would be just in regard to the PERS plan.
The discussion here.
Oh, I'm sorry, just a moment. Okay.
But what we're looking at is how it affects.
Oh, I'm sorry, I stand corrected. It affects all plans, but the dollars are what we're talking about here.
The charge of this.
Charge. Okay, as far as the rating. Thank you. Sorry for that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Don Larson. I'm here today representing the National Federation of Independent Business Owners. We're a network of nearly 2,500 employers, small businesses in North Dakota with an average employee count of 10 in the state. And I would just echo Matt's sentiments. Understand that you're looking at directly what this means to the PERS plan, but the bill does have a mandate for all employers. As a small business owner myself, I know what it's like every year when I get that new bill from Blue Cross Blue Shield. I'm trying to make decisions on whether we're going to keep staff, whether we're going to be able to give pay raises, or whether we're going to be able to keep the full insurance coverage that we have for our employees right now. And so I would ask you to consider the impact on small business as you make your decision on this bill, and would stand for any questions.
Any questions of Don? If not, thank you. Anyone else?
Chairman LaFleur, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Carlson. I'm representing Sanford Health Plan today. I do not want to comment today on the or discuss the value of IVF and infertility treatment. I think we've heard on both sides at the IBL committee earlier this week and from individuals today that this service obviously brings value to the quality of lives to many individuals. I am here, however, to clarify that this bill does cover two segments of the population, the PERS segment as well as the insured population covered by individual, large group, small group employers in the market. With regards to PERS, Sanford Health Plan takes a neutral position as whether or not PERS wants to pay for an additional infertility benefits. We will say that oftentimes we will say if you legislate it, we will price for it. So if it is up to the taxpayers in this committee and the policymakers in the state and they choose to offer additional benefits to state employees, that by all means is up to you, and it's a healthy discussion to have, and it certainly belongs at this committee for your decision to make. With regard to group, individual, and association health plans, I do want to clarify, though, the Sanford Health Plan's position would be to oppose. And I do want to make a comment about the appropriate channels to make these decisions through as a reminder for mandates. With regards to the small group and the individual market, would like to remind the committee that the state must assume the cost of mandates in excess of the essential health benefits. Some of you may recall that committees at the Health Care Reform Committee meeting was part of a dialogue of setting what the health essential health benefits were a couple years ago. And that is within the purview of the state. If this legislature wants to re-evaluate the conversations of what's in the essential health benefit package and decide whether infertility belongs in there or not, that's probably the appropriate gate or channel to go through as part of the evaluation process. And the requirement that states are still responsible for defraying the costs of new mandates was just confirmed recently by a memo by CMS just this last October. With the escalating costs in the individual and small group market, it is difficult for small businesses to continue to add additional mandates to their cost. I would also add that today, employers do have the decision to add infertility benefits if they so choose. Your carriers will price it out as a rider. And I think that conversation is held at the individual employer group level every day. It is a difficult conversation as employers struggle to add additional benefits for an additional rider fee or rider cost every renewal. Lastly, we would like to testify that Section 3 of the bill, as it stands now, currently exempts the infertility mandate from the PERS study. I just want to take a moment today to talk about the value of doing the LRC study and the PERS study. Section 540328, as passed by the legislature a couple years ago, requires that any new mandates go through a cost-benefit analysis provided by the Legislative Council to study the extent of what the proposed mandate would do to increase or decrease costs, in this case, increase costs. The purpose and the value of actually doing this study, as outlined, as exempted right now in Section 3, is to actually help carriers, insurance companies, accurately price the benefit. So when you have a couple years to study adding benefits that traditionally have not been offered in the state. For example, cryopreservation can span several years for some individuals. The purpose is that it would minimize any premium shock for the market. If carriers aren't sure how much cost new benefits will add, they might overestimate. So doing a study actually helps them hit the mark more closely in order to prevent any shock to those employer group premiums. So I would encourage this committee, Section 3 be removed so that it allows the study to occur. With that being said, I'm happy to take any questions or comments.
I have a question.
Senator Mather.
Mr. Chairman and
Ms. Carlson, is the rider something available through Sanford Health in your insurance product, and what would it cost?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Mathern, the rider is available to our clients to purchase, and the cost depends on how big the employer is, how many people they insure. And so that is available in the large group market, yes. In the small group market, those are the essential health benefits that have been set by this legislature and the Division of Insurance collectively. So large employers have that choice.
So what would be the cost for a large employer?
It depends on the demographic mix of that large employer. It's priced, it's experience rated would be the word I would, is what we would call it in actuarially speaking.
Can you just choose one?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mather, I'm not an actuary, and I'm sure I'd get in big trouble if I threw a number out there by my own actuarial team. I don't have a number for you. Again, every employer, a rider would be different. I would suspect, I think we have had comments in other states that it could drive up costs anywhere from 1% to 2% of premium. Depending on the expense of benefits, but again, a large employer might not specifically choose the benefits in front of you. They might choose a dollar amount as a limit or a number of tries as a limit.
Any further questions? Thank you, Lisa. Anyone else?
Do we have an opportunity to amend in this committee or not?
No,
we do not.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, then we have Senate Bill 2233 in front of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Crate.
I am not a big fan of mandates, never have been. Our plan that we have now with the PERS also does cover, you know, part of this, and I would move an unfavorable recommendation.
Okay. Representative Crate moves an unfavorable recommendation. Is there a second? Motion and a second by Senator Lee. Any discussion on the unfavorable recommendation?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mather.
I would support this this benefit. I think it appears to me there has been some discussion about you know, putting some dollar amount on. I agree with the insurance representatives that, you know, this does cost some money and it would have an impact. But I think moving it to a policy committee with a unfavorable recommendation might delete that option of actually working the bill very much. And so I'm gonna vote no on the measure, hoping we could try another motion after that one fails.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, I ask the clerk to take the roll.
Thank you, Representatives LaFleur.
Yes.
Crate?
Yes.
Mitzkak?
No.
Ruby?
Yes.
Senators Dever?
Yes.
Becadal?
Aye.
Krebsba? Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
No.
The motion does carry.
What's the
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to 2.
Okay, the motion for an unfavorable recommendation passes 6 to 2, and the report will be attached. Okay, House Bill 1374, Scott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Miller again. I'm the Executive Director of North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. excuse me. House Bill 1374 requires the Department of Human Services, or DHS, to open their Pharmacy Benefit Manager, or PBM, program to several entities. They currently have a PBM program for their Medicaid, for the state's Medicaid program. The bill also requires North Dakota PERS to use the Department of Human Services PBM, eliminating a PBM search from the general requirement that we contract for these services through a competitive bid process. Our consultant had several notes that you can see there. There's a concern over whether the DHS PBM offers out-of-state pharmacy benefits that would compare with the current PERS pharmacy network and possible member disruption, my gosh, as a result. There's also a question whether the DHS PBM complies with the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, or CMS, Medicare regulatory requirements that would be required for DHS to offer an employer group waiver plan, referred to as an EGWP, to the PERS retiree group. They also questioned whether DHS's capabilities compared to a full-service PBM in the areas of technology, medication management programs, member access, and other areas. There's potential pharmacy disruption, and they recommended a detailed study be conducted of the proposal. As we examined the bill and talked with some folks from DHS, we had a couple other comments that we'd like to make. The last time we went out to bid for a health insurance plan, we did issue an RFP for both a bundled and an unbundled bid. An unbundled bid is when you bid out the health insurance plan and the pharmacy benefit manager services separately. At that time, a separate unbundled approach actually was a favorable approach to take. The problem is once we, once the board decided that, then we looked closer at the statute, and the statute required, at that requires still, a certain insurance product. What is it called? Stop-loss insurance. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Stop-loss insurance for us to be able to go self-insured for the PBM, which is the way that we would have had them gone, or not self-insured, but through that product. Unfortunately, there are no stop-loss insurance products out there for those products, and so we were effectively prohibited from unbundling those services. Well, the bill that you looked at earlier, 2045, actually contains a provision that removes that requirement, and so going forward, if that is to pass and become law, then we would have that opportunity next time that we went out to bid. When we testified on this bill earlier this week, this was heard a little bit earlier this week, we suggested that the amendment to they amend the bill to, one, make it an option for the PERS board, where that would be one of several PBMs that we could choose to use if we were to unbundle our health insurance and PBM, and also to amend out that Part D. As I mentioned before, our consultant had noted that there might be an issue with our ability to use them for our Part D product. The fiscal note, we also had, and we're still looking into this, and so we haven't made any firm conclusions on this, but we're concerned whether the savings that has been projected are related to the experience. We note the information that we received is the average age for Medicaid folks is about 39, whereas the average age for our health plan is north of 46. We're not sure of the relationship between age and pharmacy usage, but from a general overall health plan perspective, every year of age, every year that the average age in a health plan goes up, the expenses go up about 3%. We don't know if that's applicable to pharmacy also. We're actually researching that right now. Again, that would be the benefit of a study, but we're looking into that. We're also concerned at the part of the fiscal note that says that there would be about a $14 million savings to the general fund, because that would basically come from our budget. Well, these monies don't flow through our budget. And so that savings to the general fund isn't accurate. And so we're working on, or at least we don't believe it's accurate. So we're working on that as well. But in any event, that concludes my comments regarding House Bill 1374.
Thank you, Scott. Anyone else would like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1374?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Carlson. I represent Sanford Health Plan today. Today I offer testimony in opposition of 1374. Sanford Health Plan is honored to have served North Dakota residents and business owners and government programs since 2009. I asked the committee today to consider a couple reasons before legislating a state department to begin competing against private sector businesses. Number one, first of all, the private sector is in the business of taking risk. The state generally is not. Insurance companies protect businesses using risk-based models, and we protect themselves and our clients by taking on the risk for the private sector. Taking on risk for is not generally the role of a state department. Secondly, building a PBM is a step towards big government and expanding big government. Insurance carriers use our subcontractors to bid on private sector business. This is a model that creates jobs using infrastructure that is scalable and keeps up with the technology and best-in-class industry standards. The state brings value in serving public programs. Similarly, the private sector serves the free market. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Lisa? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1374? Okay. Committee discussion. Any discussion or is there a motion?
I move disapproval.
Senator Mather moves an unfavorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second for an unfavorable recommendation. Committee discussion. Senator Dever.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say that I know that Medicaid does a great job of handling the prescription drug side of the services for Medicaid, and I applaud that, but if Andy Purs wants to unbundle and manage that service themselves, I think that's for Purs, and I would want to see them shift that authority to another agency. And I also believe that the Department of Human Services should involve itself in services of the Department of Human Services and not for others. And I see in this bill it says that they would provide PBM services to traditional Medicaid, to Medicaid expansion, to PERS, and to private sector employers, and I don't think that's appropriate.
Any further discussion? Okay, then I would ask the clerk to take the roll on an unfavorable recommendation. No.
Right?
Yes.
Nope.
Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
Senators Dever?
Yes.
Beckedahl?
Aye.
Krebsbaum? Larson? Ali?
Aye.
And Mather?
Aye.
And that motion does carry as well.
And that will.
Seven.
The unfavorable recommendation does carry, and the report will be attached on the 7-1 vote. Okay, moving on to House Bill 1419. Scott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Miller. Again, I'm the Executive Director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. I brought my water up with me because this will take a little while, so please bear with. House Bill 1419 is kind of similar to what you considered over the interim 382 and 383, which proposes to close the defined benefit plan or the hybrid plan, if you will, to new state and political subdivision employees. This would do it after December 31st, 2024. It does transfer $20 million a year, or would like to transfer $20 million a year from the SIF fund into the North Dakota PERS fund until the fund is 100% funded, which never happens under our actuarial analysis. All new state employees would go into the defined contribution plan after December 31st, 2024. The DC plan does not currently allow political subdivision employees, and this bill did not change that. It does not apply to judges, National Guard, or public safety members. We understand that the intent of the bill was not to close the hybrid plan to public or political subdivision employees. But there's language in it that does. There's a change to the definition of eligible employee that specifically says eligible employee for the hybrid plan, the defined benefit plan, that specifically says that public safety, or I keep saying that, political subdivision employees are not eligible employees for the defined benefit plan. We understand that was an error, and there may be an amendment to only close it for state employees and not close it for political subdivision employees. It allows current state defined benefit plan members to elect to transfer into the DC plan. That amount transferred is the greater of the actual present value of benefits or the employer and employee contributions plus interest. DC members would vest, under this bill, would vest 100% in the employer contribution after 1 year. Currently, there's a four-year vesting where they vest in 25% of the employer contribution up to 25% of the employer contribution each year for 4 years. From an administrative perspective, the accelerated DC employer contribution vesting reduces a funding source for our administrative costs. The forfeitures, if somebody were to be in the DC plan and only vest in 50% of the employer contribution before they left, that other 50% we use for our administrative costs. So there may be a possibility that we would need to increase fees for DC members to compensate. For that transfer, we would need to liquidate monies from our investment portfolio, and that forced liquidation of investment assets to fund the transfer amount may decrease returns and affect our asset allocation. This, as written, this would remove over 300 political subdivisions from an access to an established retirement plan. The DC plan, again, does not currently allow political subdivision employees to participate.
Senator Becquerel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Scott, currently, the state DC plan does not have any political subdivisions involved in it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Becquerel, no, political subdivisions are not eligible.
They would have their own 457 plan then within their own system? Is that how that works?
Mr. Chairman,
I know the city of Williston has one. I didn't know if it was independent of you or not. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Becquerel, if they have a 457 plan, that's a supplemental retirement savings account. I believe they participate in our defined benefit plan.
So you're talking about just defined contribution that the state has currently.
Exactly.
Okay, I got you.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, political subs can participate, and we have many in our 457 plan.
Okay.
The current language, the way that reads, seems to require us to remove political subdivision employees from the DB plan, including public safety, without any real guidance how to do so, although, again, my understanding is that will be amended. We anticipate an actual loss for every DB to DC transfer. Currently, there's the two transfer amounts, the actual present value, 100% of the actual present value of the accrued benefit, or the employer and employee contributions plus interest. Right now, we're only 72% funded, and so if it's 100% of the benefit, we're losing about 28% of that with every transfer. That would increase funding problems for the state, for political subdivisions, and for all remaining defined benefit employees. Our consultant notes that, again, the main PERS system is currently projected to become insolvent in 2106. Under this bill, the main PERS system will become insolvent between 2048 and 2052, depending on the scenario. Notably, once the main PERS system becomes insolvent, because the trust fund is not statutorily divided, benefits will continue to be paid out and eventually drain the trust funds for judges and public safety employees. Another consultant note is the asset allocation will need to be gradually de-risked. Right now we are investing for the long term. We have a 30 to 40 year time horizon that we typically look at for our investments. If this bill were to pass to close the defined benefit plan, we would need to de-risk those assets. We would not be able to take the same risk then with a closed system that we're able to now because the system is an ongoing endeavor. We don't ever anticipate the state of North Dakota to go out of business, and so we can take some additional risk. If we close the plan, we'll need to de-risk the investment portfolio in order to account for that. We modeled, we're not sure what that trajectory would look like. We had our actuary model both a 6.5% and a 5.5% assumed rate of return going forward as an average over the course of the remaining lifetime of the defined benefit plan in order to come up with some idea. And just for your information, we have some experience with this. We administer the job service plan, which is a closed defined benefit plan, and just last summer moved the risk allocation from a 70% bonds and 30% equities to 80% bonds and 20% equities, which resulted in a lowering of the assumed rate of return down to 4.7%. So that's already below that, even that lower 5.5% rate. The lower projected investment return and lower future contributions, because we won't have new members coming in, result in the depletion, a rapid depletion of assets. The additional $20 million annual contribution is insufficient to replace those assets. We would need an additional 12.22% of pay in contributions to stabilize the plan. That's what's reflected in the fiscal note. That would result in a 19.34% total compensation rate, or total contribution rate, from the state employers and political subdivision employers. You can see on the next slide what our actual projections look like. If you recall from our earlier discussion last summer, the scenarios 1 and 2 and 1A, 1B, and 1C, I'll explain. So scenario 1 is that investment return with a discount rate of 5.5%. Scenario 2 is the 6.5% that we had talked about earlier. 1A is assuming, we also had to make an assumption of how many people would transfer from the defined benefit hybrid plan into the defined contribution plan, because we just don't know. So we had to model 0%, 10%, and 30%. And so you can see the result of that, the year the assets are depleted for the main system basically doesn't change in scenario A. Or scenario 1, it's 2048 is the earliest that we would deplete our assets, 2052 is the latest. And you can see that in more of a graphical graph on the next page. That's basically the worst case scenario. That top line that you see that's nearly horizontal but at the end tailing toward the ground, that's tailing down to zero at 2106 with the changes present in House Bill 1419, we run out of money in 2053, much sooner as you can see. So that is House Bill 1419. The PERS board today directed me to oppose this bill.
Any questions for Scott? Senator Becquerel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Scott, I'm assuming that the reason it doesn't perform as well is because, first of all, you close the fund so rapidly in 2024, that's only another 5 years from now, and you lose all those contributions, correct? And does that take into account the 1+1 if contribution increase in those 5 years? Is that actually in here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Becquerel, no, we can only cost out what's in the bill.
And then so that variable, and then the other variable would be the amount of money annually that goes in to help to buttress the account back up. Were there any other variables? Did you change those variables in any way to see if you could make this work? In other words, extending the timeline for the defined contribution to kick in so you don't close it as rapidly? Or more money per year? Did you look at those variables?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Becquerel, no. Again, we have to cost out the, for this purpose, we have to cost
whatever's
out
what's
in the bill, right?
Okay.
The other bill that we talked about earlier with the $265 million injection, that moved us up over 80%, I believe over 80% funded with that cash injection. Yeah. But from this perspective, the one if the one and one happened to be approved and this bill at the same time, it wouldn't do anything. We need an extra 12% contribution rate, and that would only be 2.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Anyone in the audience like to address us in regard to House Bill 1419? Anyone else like to address us in regard to House Bill 1419? Okay, then we will bring it back to committee. Any committee discussion, or is there a motion? Senator Depper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that there are several legislators who would like to see us move to defined contributions. In any case, whether defined benefits is a good investment or not. So I think if they're serious about that, the best way to do that is to pass 2227, and in 18 years we'll be fully funded, and then we could make that move. This bill is going to go broke. No question about it. So I think, Mr. Chairman, I would move a not favorable recommendation on this.
Okay, Senator Dever makes an unfavorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and second for an unfavorable recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the roll on House Bill 1419. An unfavorable recommendation.
Thank you, Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Mitzkai?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Beckedahl?
Aye.
Krebsbach? Lee? And Mallon?
Aye.
That motion does carry.
Motion for an unfavorable recommendation carries 7-1, and the report will be attached to House Bill 1419. Okay, House Bill 1469, Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, Scott Mueller, Executive Director of North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. House Bill 1469 restricts pharmacy benefit manager use of step therapy. It would prohibit pharmacy benefit manager from imposing a step therapy protocol for patients with metastatic cancer. Sanford indicates that there is no actual impact for the North Dakota PERS plan since we do not require step therapy for oncology drugs, which would be applicable. ESI, who is our PBM for our Medicare Part D plan, does use step therapies in some instances, but advised us this will not have an impact on us. Our consultant noted a concern that a new high-cost drug may create financial risk for the plan, especially if step therapy had been warranted. Our consultant also noted that proposed federal legislation specific to Medicare Part D prescription plans would allow step therapy on protected class drugs, which contradicts House Bill 1469. So my board is neutral if we can exempt Part D plans out of this, basically.
Okay. Any questions of Scott? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1469? Okay, seeing no one, then we will go to committee. What are the wishes of the committee in regard to House Bill 1469? I would probably go unfavorable, but
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mathern.
I need some help.
Okay.
I'd like to ask Scott a few questions.
Can you back up, Scott?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I didn't hear the original bill. And I'm trying to understand this a little more. And did your board consider this? Or did this happen outside of your board discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, this was not a PERS bill.
Has your board considered this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, yes, they considered it this afternoon at a special board meeting and directed me to appear as neutral, but with the encouragement that we try to get Part D plans exempted from the requirement.
So you're suggesting a change of the bill if we were to approve it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, not here.
Right. Someplace. I mean, you're suggesting the legislature change the bill.
And we have suggested that. It's been heard earlier this week.
How does that look?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mathern, I'm new enough at this that I don't know how it looks, frankly.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, the only reason that I would look at an unfavorable is, I mean, there is some good intent in this bill. There clearly is, but the Medicare Part D, I mean, we have to do a recommendation based on its present form. Senator Lee.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask Scott a question, too. Could you talk a little bit about step therapy protocol? I don't know what that means.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lee, I might better turn that over to Danny from Sanford Health Plan. He's the, their, I'm not sure, he's the pharmacist guy.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Danny Weiss. I'm Senior Executive Director of Pharmacy Benefit at Sanford Health Plan. To answer your question, Senator, step therapy protocols are established by insurance as a cost mitigating process. We take, when there are more cost-effective medications available, we require the use of those medications before graduating to higher cost options. In oncology therapy today, that principle doesn't apply as well because most treatments are cutting edge brand name products and do not have an equivalent generic or lower cost option. So when we advised for this bill, we felt that it did not have any relevance in today's era. Our concern as an insurer is that the language seemed to be written from a manufacturer, and we fear a manufacturer is going to be putting out a medication that is almost identical to a generic product that's available today that will be much higher cost. The clinical efficacy may be very similar to a generic product that's available at a more cost-effective mechanism. So our fear is that this will be advantaging a manufacturer to the disadvantage of the premium payer and the clinical outcome for the member. Does that answer your question, sir?
Good job. Yeah, you've changed my mind. I guess I would ask, Jen, could you or Scott explain the the prohibition on federal legislation, or I'm sorry, any other questions for, okay,
thank you.
On the proposed federal legislation, the Medicare Part D.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Right. As you can see from the memo from Deloitte, our actuary, they just said that there's proposed federal legislation specific to Part D plans that would allow step therapy protocols to be implemented on protected class drugs. I'm not familiar with that phrase, but that would include another word that I can't even say, much less I'm familiar with. But from their perspective, this bill would seem to be contradictory to that proposed legislation.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other comments, or is there a motion? The chair would entertain a motion for a favorable recommendation, but that's the chair.
Mr. Chairman, if that's what you're looking for, is a favorable recommendation, I'll make that motion.
Okay, there's a motion for a favorable recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I would ask the clerk to take the roll on a favorable recommendation.
Thank you, Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Kreit?
Yes.
Mitzkak?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Becadal?
Aye.
Krebsbaugh?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
No.
That carries, what do we?
Okay, the favorable motion carries 8-1, and the report will be attached. We'll now go to House Bill 1500. Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is the State Board of Higher Education restructuring bill. The reason why it became possibly important to this committee is there are a number of provisions within the bill that reference one of the 5452 chapters. But we have confirmed that essentially what's happening is they're merely repeating what has been in statute for years. They're proposing to split the higher Board of Higher Education into three. And so what they did was they took language that already exists and put it into the other two. And so from our perspective, we cannot identify any effect that this would have on North Dakota PERS, because whatever effect there would have been from this legislation would have happened back in the early 70s. When it was originally enacted. So from our consultant and from our analysis, we could not see an impact in North Dakota PERS.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Scott? Would anyone else like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1500, please? Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Faye Kopp, and I'm with the Teachers Fund for Retirement. Similar to what Scott just informed you a few minutes ago, the Teachers Fund for Retirement, and we've also analyzed the bill, and while there are provisions that were in place in TFFR statutes and in higher ed statutes in the 60s and 70s that were carried forward in this bill, we do not identify any impact on the TFFR fund as a result of that change, and therefore we do not believe there's any actuarial impact on the plan.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Faye? Okay. Anyone else like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1500?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'm a lot shorter than previous speakers, apparently. My name is Tammy Dolan. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Administrative Affairs at the University System Office. And we've got attorneys looking at this. We've got varying opinions on what's going on here. Completely agree with the impact on PERS and TFFR. The university system right now does administer their own defined contribution plan, has since the 80s, some of this language got put in the bill. Right now, our concern with the way the bill is structured is it does, right now we've got one system, and this would create three. It would create three different boards with basically three different systems, and the language appears to allow those boards to implement their own retirement plans. So the impact to us, if they would choose to do that, could be higher fees on the people that remain in the existing plan because it is a defined contribution plan. So that would be the impact to our existing plan if the bill were to pass the way it is now. We also do know that that was maybe an unintended consequence of the bill and may be amended out later. But that, as it stands today, that's where we're at.
So would you oppose this bill? I'm putting all the pressure on you. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, right now, regarding the benefits piece of it, we're uncertain as to where we would be. So I guess I'm more neutral right now on this bill. There's a lot of other components going on here, and right now the board has not taken an official position on this. We're waiting to see what happens more towards crossover.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Tammy? Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1500? Okay, well, as far as the committee is concerned, I'm hearing the word neutral a lot, and it's not, we don't have to give a favorable or unfavorable recommendation. We can give a no recommendation because there really isn't much for us to say, yes, this is the right thing to do, or no, it's not. So for my own, I would put forward a...
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're looking for a, let's see, how is it called again?
No recommendation.
No recommendation. No, there's another word.
What is the proper way?
Without committee recommendation.
Is that what, okay.
The way it reflected, without committee recommendation.
Without motion, a second, okay. Any further discussion? Okay, then I'll ask you to call the roll on House Bill 1500 and if no recommendation.
Thank you, Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Mitstad?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
And Senators Dever?
Yes.
Breckadahl?
Aye.
Krebsbach?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
Aye.
And that's 9-0.
Okay, the motion for a no committee recommendation does pass, and the report will be attached. All right, we'll go to House Bill 1509.
Do you want to make a comment that you go to jurisdiction? Or for?
It's the next one, isn't it?
It's attached to this one. It's attached to this one.
You're talking about Representative Boucher's?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so on this particular Bill 1509, if you remember, and Jen, correct me if I'm misstating things, the committee gave the authority to the chair and the vice chair to make jurisdictional decisions. Mm-hmm. And so Senator Dever and I did agree to take jurisdiction on 1509 and 1484.
1484.
I'm sorry, 1484. Okay. But we're talking about 1509 right now.
And those two are identical.
And the two are identical. Okay. Okay, so we'll go to 1509. And thank you, Jen. Scott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, Scott Miller, Executive Director of the North Dakota Public Employee Retirement System. House Bill 1509 establishes a paid family medical leave program. The reason why we had brought 1509, and I'm just learning about this other bill now, we had brought 1509 to your attention was that it requires a paid family medical leave program to allow an eligible employee to maintain their existing benefits while taking leave. Of course, one of the major benefits of being a public employee for the state of North Dakota is our retirement benefit. And so we were concerned about what this bill might do to the retirement plan. But what the bill also says is the paid family medical leave fund is created in the Workforce Safety and Insurance Fund, and they administer the program and make the payments. Well, we have a section 545201, subsection 23, that defines the word salary for use in final average salary purposes for and contribution purposes for North Dakota PERS. And salary does not include, it specifically does not include workforce safety and insurance benefits. As a result, the payments are not eligible for North Dakota PERS retirement benefits, and we do not believe the bill has an impact on North Dakota PERS. Because of that, our consultant has agreed that there is no actuarial impact on PERS from House Bill 1509.
Okay. Any discussion or any questions of Scott? Okay. Okay. And we do have the sponsor, Representative Hansen. Would like to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The paid family medical leave bill will be heard in the IBL committee on Monday afternoon. So we'll have a robust policy discussion on this topic at that time. One of the key points of the bill that I would like to mention is the benefit that it will have to families in North Dakota. A lot of families deal with caregiving issues, whether it be for a newborn, either a child born to you or a child adopted, as well as caring for an adult, so a spouse or a parent or a grandparent. So it will definitely help out families when they are facing choosing between their job and temporarily taking care of a loved one. I would also emphasize the potential benefit on our workforce challenge in North Dakota. We have a great problem attracting new employees to North Dakota, and this would really be a competitive advantage that North Dakota would have, differentiating us from the neighboring states and really being able to attract employees to North Dakota and retain them for a longer period of time, especially younger workers. So I do think it would help us with our workforce challenges. When I think about the fiscal note, besides the details outlined for you today, there's also the potential that it could reduce usage of the state's SPED and XSPED programs. These are programs administered by Human Services for families that need additional help in caregiving. So it could have some potential positive financial impact for the state. I would stand for any questions.
Any questions for Representative Hansen? Seeing none, thank you.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Representative Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hansen. Does the plan include where employees can donate from their leave to another person? Say somebody's got 100 sick days and they'd like to donate some of those to the individual that is on the medical leave at that particular time. Does your plan allow that to happen?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Craig, no, our plan does not address that, and it does not specify that that would be allowed. I would say that an individual employer could create their own policies for flexibility at the employer level, but our bill does not address that.
Okay. Yeah. Senator Krebsbaugh.
I'm sorry,
continue.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a number of companies that do allow that to happen, and, you know, it's a good will policy, and, you know, people that donate a couple of days, you know, it's really a nice thing to do, and I think it builds morale, and just a suggestion.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kreit, thank you for that idea. I appreciate that.
Senator Krebsbaugh.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my question is, I see that this is going to be administered more or less through the North Dakota Workforce Safety. Would there be any request for FTE for that position or for that function?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Krebsbaugh, we did not include that in the bill. So, no, we did not do that.
Okay, any further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dever.
Representative Hansen, this provides up to 12 weeks per year paid.
Correct.
Why would anybody do anything less? And have you met Senator Connie Honor and his family?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dever, I think the reason people would do less is because they would prefer to have 100% of their pay instead of 66% of their pay.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up question. WSI benefits are 66% because they're not taxable. So they approach the level of their pay because they're not paying any taxes on them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, I had anticipated that the wages that they get during their leave period would be taxable.
Any further questions? Senator Mather.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, remind us, what are our ancestor countries offer here, like Norway or Germany?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Mather, the United States is the only developed nation in the world without a national parental leave program. In the United States, only 14% of employees have some kind of paid leave program. So this would certainly be a welcome addition to many employees because most do not get it through their employers, and the United States is comparatively behind compared to other countries like our Scandinavian friends. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, thank you, Representative Hansen.
You're welcome.
Any further comments from the public regarding House Bill 1509? Okay, then we'll take it to the committee. Basically, the comments in relation to PERS, not the whole bill, but to PERS, you're saying the payments are not eligible for ND PERS retirement benefits. We do not believe the bill has an impact on PERS. So therefore, wouldn't that be another without committee recommendation, or does somebody see it differently? Senator Mather.
I guess I would see the other impact that was noted. When people actually care for their elderly folks or other family members, there are other impacts that are actually positive for us. And so I would move a favorable recommendation.
Okay. There's a motion for a favorable recommendation. Is there a second? A motion and a second on a favorable recommendation. Scott, could I ask you a question? Am I missing something in this, not addressing the totality of the bill, but merely with PERS, which is what our charge is? Is there anything in there that is either positive or negative in terms of PERS, you know?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, from our reading of the statute, since it's a benefit that's being provided by workforce safety, and workforce safety benefits are specifically excluded from the definition of salary for our purposes, we don't believe that there's an impact on PERS.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. If you could call the roll on House Bill 1509 and a favorable recommendation.
Representative LaFleur?
No.
Kurt?
No.
Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Ruby?
No.
Senators Dever?
No.
Beckedahl?
No.
Krebsbach?
No.
Ali?
No.
And Mather?
Aye.
Okay, the favorable recommendation fails by a vote of 2-7. Is there another motion? Representative Ruby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would actually recommend, or without a recommendation.
Okay, the motion is for without committee recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion on the motion?
Was that Beckedahl or me?
That's Beckedahl, yes, I'm sorry. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the roll on a without committee recommendation on House Bill 1509.
Thank you. Representative LaFleur.
Yes.
Craig.
Yes.
Yes. This is just the price I pay for being left-handed. I apologize. Ruby.
Yes.
And Senator Dever.
Yes.
Beckedahl.
Aye.
Krebsbach.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
And Mather.
Aye.
And that motion was carried.
Okay, so then we would go to committee discussion, committee recommendation. Excuse me.
We've got 1484.
1484, that's where I was going next. Okay, so 1484 is the bill that Senator Dever and I agreed we would take jurisdiction over because it is... Is it exactly the same as 1509?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, 1484 has additional items that 1509 does not have. However, the portions of 1509 are identical and imported into that. The other provisions in 1485-4 are not relevant, I don't think, to the PERS, so it shouldn't be on your radar.
By radar, do you mean no recommendation? Is that what you mean?
That's not what I said.
Okay. I know you're a lawyer, so you're going to... Okay. Well, let's just go through the same process. Scott, if you could address us in regard to... Have you had time to look at 1484?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we just learned about it 5 minutes ago when you mentioned it.
Okay.
Sharon brought it up to me on her laptop. And we agree there are many provisions within the bill that are different from 1509. But the applicable provisions, that is the paid family medical leave and the issue as far as what maintaining existing benefits would mean from a PERS perspective, we believe just a very quick perusal of it look identical to 1509. And if they are in fact identical to 1509, again, we do not believe that they would have an impact on PERS.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Any questions of Scott? The minority leader's been sitting here patiently for an hour and a half. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Josh Boucher, District 44. Correct. The 1484 has more in it than 1509, but we borrow the language from 1509. to give you a summary of what 1484 is, as I hope it crosses all your desks and you can support it when you're in your policy committees. 1484 is looking at how to invest the legacy fund assets from 2017 to 19 that's remaining, and then 1921 going forward. And part of that would be a $5 million allocation for the startup of a paid family leave fund, exactly mimicking what Representative Hansen has proposed in her legislation. For the mechanics of that, just for your awareness, that $5 million investment paid by employers and employees over the next 20 years would actually, it's more perceived to be a loan, because that $5 million would be paid off based on the numbers that have been ran as the bill has been drafted. So again, administered by Workers Safety and Insurance, and of course would want to work with them as it evolves over the next 20 years, how that is either reallocated or benefits employees throughout and employers throughout North Dakota.
Any questions for Representative Beauchesne? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience. Anyone else like to address the committee in regard to House Bill 1484? Okay, once again, our recommendation is based on how it affects PERS, and since this does not have an effect, the chair would recommend, again, without committee recommendation, but what are the wishes of the committee? Senator Lee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move a without committee recommendation.
Okay, there's a motion for without committee recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Jen to call the roll on House Bill 1484 and without committee recommendation.
Representatives LaFleur?
Yes.
Kreit?
Yes.
Mitzkak?
Yes.
And Ruby?
Yes.
Senator Stever?
Yes.
Becketall?
Aye.
Krebsbaugh?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
And Mather?
Aye.
And that carries as well.
Okay, that motion is carried and the report will be attached. Is there anything else that to bring before the committee? No. Motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. I want to thank the committee for all your hard work and the public for your patience. Meeting adjourned.